Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is June 11th. We are here with a special weekend edition of the weekly recap. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I slept in today. I woke up and ETH was down bad again. But, you know, you live and your ETH goes down.
Another day in Goblin Town.
Another day in Goblin Town.
Dude, lots of Goblin Town to discuss this week, man.
Yeah, looking at our agenda, it's down only, basically.
Everything is down only, and like not even the goblins. The goblins are really down.
The most bullish thing for us to discuss today is actually the Ropsten, the testnet. Merge.
Yes.
That's pretty bad.
The testnet merge went well. That was the only thing that went well.
Everything else is bad.
Yeah, it went just okay. Citadel is entering crypto. That's a that's a good thing for them.
Did you see Jim Cramer posted the crypto markets were cooked?
Oh, really?
That's the best bottom
signal
I've seen.
That's the most bullish thing I've seen the whole year. And the last thing I heard from Jim Cramer was that he was bullish on the merge. He was like, I could see ETH putting up 30% from here. That's when it was like 2,600.
Isn't it down 30% like over the last 2 weeks? Like,
Well, on that bright note,
let's talk about the merge, stake to ETH, all the situations going on here.
Yeah, so it looks like Celsius Finance is about to collapse. Celsius is one of these lend and borrow platforms.
It's a nouveau like centralized borrow lend platform where you can like stake your crypto and earn yield on your crypto.
Yeah, kind of similar to BlockFi.
Look, I'm not gonna lie. In terms of like traditional players getting into crypto, I really like the earn yield on your crypto model. I feel like they get it a lot more than the spend your crypto, right? Like nobody wants to spend their Bitcoin on a Visa card, right?
That is one of the dumbest ideas.
Yeah, it's so dumb. If you still have crypto, you want to hold it, right? Like that's just what it is.
Or turn it into JPEGs.
You want to hold it, but you can't help yourself from turning it into JPEGs.
Yes.
So I find that this model is like pretty overall, like they understand crypto a lot more than like, you know, spend crypto on your Coinbase card or whatever. Yeah. Right. Like, but that was a brief aside. What's got Celsius in trouble right now?
So it seems like, well, to give a little background, Celsius, it seems, has made a lot of questionable decisions over the past year with their treasury, like putting money in, you know, kind of questionable places to generate yield.
Just juicing yields, right?
Exactly. Just juicing yields in kind of questionable ways because they have guaranteed all these interest rates to their customers to pay out on customers' funds, right? Like to generate or to like pay out these yields that they're promising.
Yeah.
So they've done that. Most recently, it seems that, you know, there's this whole staked ETH kind of concept, right? If you don't know about what staked ETH is, listen to our last podcast on the merge. Staked ETH is a way for you to kind of lock up your ETH into the like the new proof of stake version of Ethereum, right?
Yeah.
So you stake it, and it's locked up for 6 months after this merge happens, which could be, I don't know, a year from now, that total period, right? The merge could happen maybe sometime this year. It could be, I don't know.
I mean, if you look at the prediction markets, like, people are saying 50% odds it happens by October 1st, but we literally don't know.
We really don't know. Yeah. There's a decent chance it happens this year, and the staked ETH will unlock 6 months after that. Yeah. So about a year from now, right? Now, what's happening is that Celsius, again, to generate these yields, if you stake your ETH, if you lock it up, you get some kind of yield. Right now, it's about like 4.6%, somewhere around there. So Celsius has a lot of Ethereum. You know, these are customer
funds.
From
their depositors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. From their depositors. These are customer funds. To generate some of these yields, they stake that ETH. Right.
So they take the customer's ETH and stake it themselves into this like illiquid thing where
That they cannot unstake for another year.
Yeah.
Idea hypothetically, right? Yeah. Like, we don't know.
9 months, right?
Like, 9 months, 12 months, 15 months, 4.5 years.
80 months.
Yeah.
69 months. Nice.
Okay. So now, where is the issue coming in? The issue is coming in because people are trying to withdraw their ETH from Celsius, right? The price is going down, you know, like all markets are getting cooked. People are like, okay, well, if I'm earning like 5% a year on my ETH and it's going down 5% a day in price, like, why would I do this? Like, I'm just going to pull my money out. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to do whatever, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, maybe they just want to buy JPEGs. And
maybe
like,
they do. Yeah, there's many reasons they could want their own money.
Yeah.
So people are trying to withdraw. And because Celsius has so much of their ETH staked and they can't touch it, it's liquid, people are theorizing that this is going to cause a run on their network. Right now it looks like Celsius has, do we want to give some numbers now?
Well, let's break down first the distribution of like how much ETH they have that's liquid versus how much ETH they have that's like, you know, unredeemable at least.
Right.
So they've got about 27% of the total like ETH and ETH equivalents in liquid ETH, right? So at the current rate, right, like, that gives them what, like five weeks of runway?
Yeah. So let's break this down, I guess, into like these three different components, right? So there's ETH, just the ETH, native ETH right now that's on the current Ethereum network. It's been running since 2015 or whatever.
You can think of this as their current assets.
Yeah,
right?
Like current assets. Then there is ETH 2, like the new Beacon chain that you have to natively put assets on, and those are locked up for 6 months after the merge happens. You can't unstake that. You can't do anything with that, right?
Yep.
Those are fully staked, cannot touch that, can't do anything with that. Then there's this third thing that's kind of a derivative product that's been created by a company called Lido that's called STETH, right? That's called staked ETH or STETH. I don't know. It's a derivative product. It's not the native ETH2 staked ETH. What you get when you natively put ETH on the Beacon chain, you get Beacon ETH. This is not that.
And that's still tied on the Beacon chain.
Yes.
It's just a way to keep track of how much you have staked on the proof of stake chain, right? And
so,
all of that is just untouchable.
Exactly.
Until 6 months after the merge.
Right.
Now, the staked ETH thing, I think, why don't we clarify the terminology?
Yeah.
Native staked ETH, right? Like that's just inaccessible. So we're going to go ahead.
We're going to call that Beacon ETH.
Beacon ETH, yeah. And then staked ETH, when we say that, we're going to refer to the Lido staked.
The Lido staked
ETH. The derivative
ETH.
Product.
Yeah.
So when you put ETH into Lido, what happens?
You get basically a token that Lido issues you called STETH, which is a staked ETH derivative.
It's like a receipt almost, or a claim check, like a coat check claim ticket that says, look, you put one ETH into this. Hold on to this coat check claim. And then in the future, you'll be able to come to us and get back more than one ETH, like just however much interest has compounded on the ETH that you've staked with us, you'll be able to get that much out. And so in theory, it should be trading at a premium, right? Because the Beacon chain's been running for a year at about 4 or 5% yield. So if you had put one ETH in a year ago, you would have one staked ETH, but that should, you know, but like if we were functioning in the post-merge world, that would be worth 1.04 ETH. If you like,
you're collecting that,
you can
interest.
Take it to them and be like, hey, I want my ETH out. And they'll give you the ETH plus the interest that you earned on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
mechanically, how does Lido work? Like, do they actually like stake that ETH on their side, like, and create Beacon ETH? Because the key part of this is that the STETH token is tradable at any time. It's liquid.
Yeah.
Right. There are markets for this. You can trade it at an open market price.
You can borrow it. You can lend it. You can swap it.
You can put
it
into DeFi protocols. You can do a lot of different things with it. It's not at all the same as Beacon ETH, right? So it should technically, or hypothetically, it should have this kind of monetary premium.
just like a denominator premium or whatever,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Each staked ETH token represents more than one ETH
mm-hmm.
on the proof of stake chain, right?
Yeah. Well, does it actually represent more than one, or do you just have claims on the interest?
It represents one plus the interest.
Okay.
Worth,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like so Lido is already live on Solana, for example.
Mm-hmm.
A staked SOL trades at a premium to regular SOL
yeah.
because otherwise there's an arbitrage opportunity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if they traded it 1-to-1, you could just buy one staked SOL for the price of one SOL,
mm-hmm.
redeem it with them because redemptions are live on Solana because
yeah.
it's already proof of, or it's whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go and collect the SOL and also the interest that you've earned on that SOL and give it to you.
Mm. Are they paying out interest like live now? Or is it something that you kind of, you get the interest at the end, or is it just like continuous?
You get the interest at the end, which is why these claim checks each represent one plus the interest worth.
I see.
Right.
Okay. So you have to hold the staked ETH still until kind of like the 6 months after the merge to claim the interest. Is
yeah.
That right?
At that point, they will enable redemptions.
I see.
Right. So deposits are live for Ethereum, but redemptions are not.
Mm-hmm.
On Solana, deposits and redemptions are live, mm-hmm. and it functions well.
Okay.
So
that's when you'll actually be able to get the native asset.
Yeah. Exactly. So
until
today,
then, you're just trading.
If you need liquidity on your staked ETH today, you can take it to the market and sell it mm-hmm. for some ETH. Right.
Yeah.
But effectively, what the market's telling you is that there's a pretty high premium for liquidity today.
Yeah.
And so staked ETH, while it should be trading at like 1.05-ish ETH per staked ETH,
mm-hmm.
it's currently trading at 0.96 ETH
yeah.
per staked ETH.
Yeah. So there is a negative kind of monetary premium here.
Yeah, effectively there's very, very high discount rates,
yeah.
right? That like ETH today is worth a lot more than ETH 6 to 12 months or mm-hmm. however many months from now.
Right.
And so you're like paying a premium to offload today.
Yeah. And this is the discount rate is even higher considering the fact that this staked ETH has the claim on the 4%, 5% rewards
yeah,
in,
so it's
in interest
not just
that you're still gonna
a, it's not
get.
Just like this 96 cents on the dollar
yeah.
it's 96 cents on $1.04
yeah, yeah.
yeah. So it's a pretty sharp like mispricing but like the market's sending you a pretty strong signal there
yeah
right that like either there's a lot of liquidity demand now
mm-hmm.
people don't think the merge is going to happen anytime soon or
mm-hmm.
both
mm.
But also there's a third underlying issue right which is that like Lido itself needs to operate. It's a DAO, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have costs involved. So when you stake an ETH with Lido, they delegate it to validator or like operators, to people that are, you know, validating the blockchain, right? Miners in the proof of stake world.
Mm-hmm.
And you need people to like maintain that code base. You need people to keep their website up and running. Like they do have costs, right? They need to like pay. Someday they'll pay fees to like the stakers. It's unclear if they're doing that now. And the stakers need cash flows, right, to continue operating
mm-hmm.
there, or the validators need to continue operating. So there are costs involved. And Lido itself has some ETH because they collect a little bit of a fee, I guess, when you deposit.
Mm.
And they have a governance proposal to sell some to pay for OPEX, effectively, until the merge happens. Yeah,
huh.
I think this proposal came out this past week.
Okay.
And they basically like pitched it as like to survive the bear market, we need USDC.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've opted to like I don't know if the proposal went through or if it's even live, but I mean it seems prudent, right? Like all of these protocols should have been like
right.
holding a substantial amount of their treasuries in USDC.
Yeah, treasury management is not a strong suit of this industry.
I think it probably varies a lot by protocol, right?
I would agree. I would just say as a generality.
Yeah, generally speaking, yeah, like we need higher quality treasury
mm-hmm.
people in
yeah,
crypto.
Absolutely.
Okay,
let's bring
on,
this
so.
Back to Celsius.
Yeah.
Right? So I think we gave a good background on why these issues can come about. It's a liquidity thing.
Yeah, people wanting money today versus in 12 months.
Yeah. So now let's look at Celsius's actual holdings, right? ETH. Current state ETH.
Normal ETH.
Of their total ETH holdings, 27% is in normal liquid ETH. Beacon ETH, completely untouchable for a long time, 29%. Staked ETH, Lido staked ETH, 44%.
So they could liquidate that if they needed to at a pretty heavy discount.
Massive discount.
At 96 cents on the ETH, but in reality, like, they should be even higher, right?
Yeah.
And so in aggregate, it's like 70-30, right? A little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Either illiquid or liquid, but trading at a massive discount, ETH.
Yeah.
So people are pulling their funds out, right? Because it's a bank run, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people are worried about the solvency of this protocol,
mm-hmm.
and like, they might need cash today. And so they want to withdraw their funds, and you know, you don't want to be the last one out of the door, because then you're left holding the illiquid ETH in perpetuity until the merge happens. Right.
Yeah.
And if Lido like fully becomes insolvent, like, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. What's your take on all of this? What do you think is going to happen to this 96 cents on the ETH dollar?
It just seems to me like it will go lower. No?
Yeah. Oh, well, we missed one really core aspect here, which is Aave, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Aave, Borrow-Lend Market, right? They enabled something called efficiency mode with mm-hmm. Aave V3. And mm-hmm. I remember when we covered Aave V3 on this podcast like months ago, because I remember thinking, does any of this matter? Are we ever going to, does anyone care? Like, mm-hmm. DeFi's, nobody cares.
Yeah.
But one nice side effect of that is I know how this efficiency mode works.
Mm-hmm.
So you can borrow like 90 something percent of, so you can deposit staked ETH. Right. Basically, efficiency mode works where you have pairs of tokens that should trade roughly one to one.
Yeah.
And because it's sort of assumed that like the volatility between the two of them is going to be relatively low.
Okay.
So you can think of like USDC to USDT. Right. The volatility of those should be relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
So if you deposit USDC, if you deposit like ETH and you want to borrow USDC, you can only borrow like 70% of the value. Right. Mm-hmm. So that you're over collateralized. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case ETH takes a 30% hit, which could never happen. In efficiency mode, because the asset pairings are relatively, not volatile relative, you know, like to each other, they allow you to borrow more. It's like 90 something percent. So if you want to borrow USDT and you have USDC deposited, for some reason, if you wanted to do that, you could borrow like 97% of the value or something. Because the idea is like, it's very unlikely that fluctuates more than 3%, right? One of the high efficiency mode pairs was staked ETH and ETH, right?
Okay.
Which frankly is kind of like not a great assumption to make, because like, who knows where staking yields are going to go. Like, mm-hmm. that, you know, you have more variables there, right?
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, it's just interesting in any concept to tie the value of one thing. I guess, like, okay, this is kind of like government bonds, right? Like, this is why, like, different maturity bonds, like, trade at different prices. You know,
I mean,
it's
that,
like,
that's more of like a time value of money thing.
Isn't this
right?
The exact same thing? ETH and staked ETH? Isn't this exactly time value of money? Like, you have
Correct.
To wait.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it exactly the same concept though?
Yeah, yeah. It's effectively like a bond with a unknown but like kind of like medium known like interest rate.
Yeah.
With a completely unknown date of maturity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, why would you ever make those things tied in price? Like forcibly tied in price. Like, it just makes no sense. There's so like two completely unknown variables.
Correct.
The concept makes no sense to me. Like,
so, I mean, staking yields aren't going to change that much, because what they depend on is the total percent of ETH in the network that's staked relative to the total outstanding supply of ETH. So and you can't stake that much that quickly, and you can't unstake that much that quickly.
Okay, that's right.
There's an on-ramp and an off-ramp. There's a waiting period.
Yeah.
So I think that's like kind of okay, right? But yeah, in reality, this was a pretty YOLO move, right? I mean, even USDC, USDT, like if there's some kind of Tether issue, like that could create some issues. Mm-hmm. But there's like no real incentive to like borrow USDC against your USDT or vice versa. Mm-hmm. With ETH staked ETH, there was an incentive. So the degenerate play here was you deposit some ETH or you deposit some staked ETH mm-hmm. into Aave, right? You borrow ETH against that. You can borrow 90-something% of the value in ETH. Take that ETH, stake it with Lido. You get back more staked ETH as your, like, coat check claim, yeah, right? Yeah. As your claim on that.
Right.
Deposit that, borrow more. Deposit that, and, you know, deposit that in, you know, stake it.
Right.
Deposit your staked receipt, borrow more.
Right.
And you just sort of, like, recursively borrow, and it's, like, effectively, like, a highly levered yield farming approach.
And since this new feature in Aave is all about capital efficiency, you can do this many, many, many times. Like,
yeah.
There's this degen box strategy that used to exist in Abracadabra. Right.
R.I.P.
Oh yeah, R.I.P. Is it dead?
I don't know. It's one of them
effectively.
Dead.
yeah. Where you could borrow like 50% of your assets.
But then do it again.
But then do it again and again.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, you're borrowing 97%.
I mean, yeah, it's
over and over and over.
I mean, what was the true innovation from Abracadabra was you could do it on their UI in one click.
Right,
I don't think you can do that in Aave in one click. But like, it's pretty easy to write a script that does this.
OG BlockFi DGen box enjoyer. It's not that hard. You can just click over and over and over.
Oh man, I don't like clicking over and over and over. What am I playing to earn? So where this becomes dangerous, right, is that you have these highly levered recursive borrowings happening where people are depositing staked ETH, borrowing ETH, getting more staked ETH back, depositing that again and again, earning, like, really juicing up the yields for themselves, right? And like, at least Celsius wasn't doing this, I hope. The issue, right, is that, like, if the price of staked ETH goes down substantially, then all of a sudden your collateral is not worth as much as your outstanding loan. You get liquidated.
Yeah.
But you get liquidated in, like, a cascading liquidation because people have this levered up so many times over.
And to, like, cover your margin, they'll, like, sell another position, right?
Yeah, those
are
keeps happening.
So it's like one cell and then the next cell to cover that and then the next cell and then
the next cell. Yeah, I mean, you can think of it that way, but in reality, they're just two pools of, like, how much do you have loaned and then how much do you have as collateral. But it's a pretty fat, like, liquidation happens, right? Basically, that's more and more of an ecosystemic risk in DeFi. Remember, like, a year ago when we were all talking about how DeFi needs to become more capital efficient to gain traction?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty NGMI now, right?
Yeah.
It turns out capital efficiency is actually a terrible idea in a super volatile asset class like this, right?
Yeah.
So you think it's going to go down more?
Well, let's tie a bow on this whole story. So people are saying that at the current rate, this kind of got kicked off by Alameda withdrawing 50,000.
Right, this is sort of a catalyst, right?
Yeah, they withdrew 50,000 staked ETH. Alameda is one of the biggest
players. They sold 60,000.
Sorry. We can't withdraw. They sold 50,000. And they're one of the biggest players in Lido, like one of the biggest staked ETH and staked SOL holders. They're very involved in the ecosystem. I don't know what their plan was here, if they're just testing something out, if they wanted to see what the issue was here.
Do you think it's like sell now, buy back later after like the FUD clears?
Yeah, I mean, they could. Yeah, I really have no idea.
I mean, they have been known to like test liquidity, right? Like Tether as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But people are saying that if this like current rate continues, like around like 50,000, people are like, so within Celsius itself from the network, people are looking to withdraw or like 50,000 ETH a week, right? At that current rate, with the liquid treasury of ETH that they have remaining, it seems like they will run out of ETH in about 5 weeks. Doesn't seem that good.
Not great.
Yeah.
And the issue is that, like, there's not a lot of incentive to buy staked ETH right now.
Right.
So they could liquidate their Lido staked ETH holdings at, like, 96 cents on the $1.04. Because really the most liquid portion of their balance sheet is this, like, natively the Beacon ETH, right, that they've staked themselves. The Lido staked ETH, at least they have something they can get. They can get some kind of, like, you know, cash back for their depositors. But even that could, like, kind of lead to insolvency if they've been promising, like, yields of X and they're receiving yields of Y. Someday the merge happens, but, like, is their take on this enough to even cover that if need be? It's tricky, right? I mean, Celsius itself is, I want to say, like, not available to New York residents. I think it's maybe not available to U.S. residents. It's, like, a very DYOR kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think you can still get it if you, like, use a VPN or whatever. But, like, it's, you know, it's been flagged as, like, being a little bit tricky to begin with.
Yeah.
And moreover, like, this is just a really irresponsible thing to do to lock up. Like, you know, I guess banks kind of do the same thing.
Do they?
Right. They're, like, taking deposits, offering loans that are, like, not necessarily immediately liquid. Right. And, like, that tends to work out okay. But the difference is with a bank has to have a certain amount of, like, shareholder equity on their balance sheet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In case they do need to cover something like a shortfall. It's not immediately clear that, like, Celsius has anything like that. Well, like
reserve
that.
Ratios and things like that?
Not banks? Just reserve ratio, but there's a separate thing. So the reserve ratio, yeah, 10%, that's absurd.
10% is, yeah, way low.
I mean, look, Celsius is doing well by that metric, yeah, yeah. Right? 27%, right?
Yeah.
It's separate. So if you want to create a bank, you have to put in cash yourself into the company that just gets held on the balance sheet as, like, a backstop kind of. And there are requirements for, like, the ratio that needs to be relative to your outstanding loans. So it's kind of like, and, you know, a lot of people were talking about, like, does this apply to, like, Circle as well, right? Because they're kind of, like, you know, taking deposits, offering things, right? They're a little less close to a bank because they're not paying interest. But, yeah, I mean, overall, things could get bad for Celsius, but Celsius doesn't have a lot of the circulating supply. Like, they don't have that much, right?
Yeah,
they
it's have, relatively like a small part,
yeah,
of the ecosystem.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. It's
bearish.
Bearish. I think staked ETH will go substantially lower from here, honestly.
What's your price target?
Yeah. Well, the closest I have to, like, offer is, like, when Luna was at, like, 100 and something.
Oh, no.
And then it went to 85.
Here's where we get in trouble.
It couldn't go down.
Making the Luna comparisons.
It couldn't go down more than this, right? Like, and then it went to 85. And once it went to 85, it was kind of a sure thing that it was going to go to, not zero, but, like, you know, when it went to 60, no one was surprised. I don't think it's that bad here, right? Like, I think that there's enough people that are bullish on the merge and, like, want that sweet, sweet 4% yield on ETH, but combined with a bear market, not that many people want ETH in general. So I just don't think there's any way that it recovers to one in the next 3 to 6 months.
Wow. All right. Goblin Town.
Goblin Town.
Oh, man.
Interestingly, there is a play here, right?
Okay.
Because the prediction markets are kind of pricing, like, you know, a merge by October 1st at a 50% like likelihood and like a 90-something% likelihood of merge by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, staked ETH is going to recover substantially. So what you could do is bet against the merge in the prediction markets and buy a bunch of staked ETH to hedge yourself out. It feels like a pretty large mispricing. There's not a ton of liquidity there, but, like, that's the, you know, that's the play here.
Hmm. All right. Well, on to more good news. Matt, it's time for America's favorite segment, the FOMO of the week. What's your FOMO of the week?
It's been a pretty like tricky week. I would say this is the hardest week I've had to find a FOMO of the week. Yeah. There's only like maybe 10 tokens that are up on the week on out of the top 300 on CoinGecko.
Okay.
And most of them are stable coins.
Yeah.
So my FOMO of the week naturally is going to be an NFT. So there's this project called We're All Going to Die.
WAGDI.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say it.
Yeah, I guess it would be WAGDI, right? It's like WAG me, but like, we're all going to die instead of we're all going to make it. You know, I feel like the narrative in the NFT space lately has just been cynicism and nihilism, right? And these guys are like next leveling this shit, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, they've got all this like sort of like medieval-esque art, and the whole idea is like, what if the world just ended in like the, you know, 1400s, right? And you know, they're doing a good job of like building out like their branding.
Yeah.
So I thought this was really cool. They have no website.
This is pretty incredible.
No website, no Discord, obviously, only Twitter and the smart contract. So if you wanted to mint this thing, you had to do it either like by writing code to interact directly with the smart contract or minting on Etherscan, which I thought was really cool. Like it really brings you like face to face with the blockchain, right? You know, it's the opposite of building out a metaverse, mm-hmm. right? It's just like, let's not fuck around here. This is on chain.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Then they've started tweeting and they're like prolifically tweeting, okay. right? And they're tweeting in this weird medieval font, which like, I don't even know how you execute that on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're sort of like building out a story. So like every day they'll pick like 5 of the 10,000 NFTs and like write out like a little bit of a storyline for each of them. And then they have like one sort of bigger overarching story where they'll be like, okay, you're like walking past this castle, like it's on fire. What do you do? Like, do you go, you know, do you walk into it and like see if you can salvage any like valuables, or do you like walk away toward the like dark forest in the east? And then they hold a Twitter poll. It's like walk west in the castle, walk east, and then depending on what people vote for, they develop the story further from there. And then they do these Twitter spaces where it's the strangest thing. Have you heard these yet?
I have not.
They have this just
when
like,
you told me though, I was shook.
Yeah. So it's a 30-minute Twitter space. Most of it is kind of just like background noises of like, you know, so they say, okay, you're walking on a hillside and it's windy, right? And they say that on Twitter. And then they'll be like, okay, time for like a live cut of it. It's almost like a video game where like you're playing the video game and that's like normal. That's like the Twitter part. And then like they do a cutaway to like a more cinematic scene. And it's very high audio quality, these things. So you'll be on the hills. You feel like you're on the hillside and the wind is blowing and you can hear everything. And then like it's a 30-minute Twitter space. There's 5-ish minutes of dialogue in each one. So the rest of it is just mysterious music, some like medieval choir bullshit, right? Like setting the scene, like, you know, background noise, right? And then someone will just come in and like say like, you know, almost like poetically and like in like very like confusing word, you know, or like not confusing, but like not direct, like here's the storyline, but like, you know, it's art, right? And they'll give you like a 5-minute speech about how we're all going to die.
So this is your FOMO of the week, Matt.
Yeah. Well, this was pretty cool because I like the way that they're really, really heavily committed to being on chain. And so, for example, as part of the storyline, there's like a fire, right? And they build up this whole narrative around like a campfire and like a big burn. We're going to sacrifice something. And then they took some of the ETH that like they've been earning in revenue, and they bought a mutant ape and sent it to the burn address. So they burned an ape.
That is really cool.
And then the like, you know, the narrator is like, the primate has now been burned. Like its ashes are scattered across this earth. Like,
and how are they like? Who's the new, like? What's the narrator? Is this in the Twitter spaces?
In the Twitter spaces. Yeah.
And they burned the mutant. shooting it live.
So you hear like crackling and the fire and then like, you know, and then like, yeah, live while this face is happening, they burnt a mutant ape for no discernible really cool. reason, just as part of the story, right?
That's really cool.
It's really fun, right? And so the narrator's like, yeah, hopefully as we spread this creature's ashes, we start the cycle anew. Like, yes, we're all going to die at the end of it, but like the cycle will never run out or, you know, like, and then they did a thing where it was like people were just randomly burning their own WagDai NFTs just for no discernible reason. They were just burning them. and then they got, you know, and then they did a storyline where it was like, for this sacrifice, we're rewarding the brave ones who were like, you know, who died by the flames, like, you know, of the burn, with an airdrop or something. And the narrator's like, you will all know my children. Like, and then, you know, they create like a whole bunch of other assets and airdrop them to the people who burn their NFT. Just very like interactive and sort of like very performance art-y. And I feel like that's kind of the narrative going on in the NFT space right now.
New meta.
Goblins, the WagDai.
Yeah.
You know, like no website or interactive anything at all, except for like Twitter spaces and the contract.
That's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. What's your FOMO of the week?
My FOMO of the week. Okay. Have you seen or heard about Web 5?
Web what?
Oh, man. So this is like Jack Dorsey's troll thing, I guess.
You know, I got a text from this about this from someone who works at Square.
Yeah.
And he was like, bro, do you see Jack really or talked about releasing Web 5? And I was like, I never would have like needed. I don't need this in my life. I'm busy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I never needed to know about this. Like, I never would have heard this storyline at all.
See, here's the thing, dude. Everybody gets so upset when you like troll them in Web 3 because everybody's, I don't know, they're like, I don't know what's wrong with them, but nobody has a sense of humor.
So religiously committed to the... Yeah, nobody has a sense of humor.
Nobody has a sense of humor in this industry. So this guy comes out, you know, Jack is always like trolling the Web3 kind of thing. He's like, oh, don't let the VC overlords fool you. Like, you know, it's just the same thing over and over. It's like, all right, okay, bro. Like, put an edit button on first. anyways, so... first, he actually does announce a cool thing with Jay-Z. They announced a Bitcoin Academy, which is like, there's not too many details, but it's starting in Marcy, actually. It's like Jay-Z's leading it. So Marcy, like Brooklyn. That's like where he grew up. It's basically like, I don't know, the mission is like promoting tools for financial independence. So I was like, all right, whatever. Good mission.
I don't know if you want to shill Bitcoin as a tool for financial independence right now. Hot take.
Ask El Salvador how that's going. but yeah, so regardless, I did think that was cool. Then they come out with this Web5 thing, which is like the new internet built on the Lightning Network and like Lightning SDKs. I was like, yo, this is pretty funny.
Wow.
Because I look at it and I'm like, look, as a recovering Bitcoin and Lightning maxi, like, this is just comical. Like, obviously, there's no substance here, but he's just trolling. Like, I don't know, like, Web 5, it's funny.
It is funny.
It is pretty funny. So my FOMO of the week is just missing this Web 4.20 idea. Like, it's just sitting right there.
What like, about Web 6.9? Like,
that's the next one.
All been memed to death now where people are talking on Twitter about, like, I'm releasing Web 10, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's my FOMO is, like, it was just right there. And now Jack Dorsey did it. And half the people don't even get it. The half that do get it are like, oh, this is so funny. It became a thing. But
I mean, he knows his audience, right? Like, Bitcoin maxis, they're like so anti-Web 3, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. Oh, they love this.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my FOMO of the week. Just because everything else is wrecked, there's nothing else to really feel FOMO about.
Yeah. I mean, I love a good joke, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. No question.
You want to talk quickly about some of these wrecks?
Yes, dude. So much more.
There's so much wreckage.
Osmosis.
Osmosis. So Osmosis is the DEX chain in the Cosmos ecosystem, right? I've never used it. Have you?
I actually have. Yes. So Osmosis is a layer one blockchain. It's its own blockchain built on Cosmos. And the whole idea of this chain is to be able to connect to every other Cosmos-based blockchain and transfer those native assets from one blockchain to another.
Through the Cosmos IBC.
Through Cosmos IBC.
Okay.
The thing is that every Cosmos coin is just down only. First of all, every Cosmos coin has no users. Every Cosmos chain, right? So it's like, okay, nobody's even trading those tokens. Then it's like every Cosmos coin is down only. Then no Cosmos chain wants to interact with other Cosmos chains. If you're on right, secret they're all sort network, of
fighting with each other.
Yeah, or... if you're on secret network, you don't really want to go over to like Juno. Like, there's no real reason for that.
The cross-chain future.
The cross-chain future, yeah. And then, so the whole function of this Osmosis chain was just to transfer these other chains' coins across from each other natively. Mm. And like, nobody really wants to do that except. Yeah. The people that are being like paid to do that with these yield farming rewards, which
right,
are like
right.
decent on Osmosis, like 100%.
Wow. Okay. But like, that's pretty mercenary too, right? You like extremely you farm mercenary. The reward and then you sell so yeah. you can capture it, right?
Yeah.
So that's down only too.
And if you're getting 100% a year and your token is down 50% a month, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
So that's what Osmosis is. What exactly happened?
There was an exploit related to, it was part of the smart contract for calculating LP positions on it. And I guess when you deposit or like withdraw, like they rounded a number or something. And as a result, they got exploited for $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Not big. Here's mm-hmm. what I find significant about it.
Mm-hmm.
They halted the chain.
Yeah, that's so insane, dude. $5 million exploit. They halted the chain.
Yeah. So funny, Ethereum dude. Has a $600 million exploit and fucking nobody cares.
Nobody bats an eye. Nobody yeah, noticed nobody for a week. Nobody noticed for a week, dude. so ridiculous. And the funny part is this, like, the founder of Osmosis is, like, this, like, super, like, loud, hand-wavy kind of dude. Like,
no,
oh,
really?
All you fucking ETH idiots don't get it. The future is Cosm Wasm. Cosmos has figured this out since the beginning. Like... It's like, bro, just chill out.
Yeah,
man.
Grandma,
just,
let's get you to bed.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
So they halted the chain, and this is possible because Cosmos runs on Tendermint consensus and therefore can only have maximum 130 validators or else it becomes unusably slow. And so it's hard-coded maximum 130 validators and
yeah.
130 probably operated by like 10 companies, right?
Oh, yeah.
And as a result, like, yeah, you can totally just halt the chain, which is just another reason to like that Cosmos is down only. Like, what an ecosystem, man.
You know, my big takeaway now is 2017 bull market, 2018, 2019, a lot of people became Bitcoin maxis.
Mm-hmm.
2021 bull market. 2022, 2023, I think a lot of people are going to become ETH maxis, BTC yeah. and ETH maxis.
I mean, you're speaking to one of them, right?
Yeah.
This fully happened to me. And the rationale, like, I was thinking about this morning when I woke up. I was like, all right, everything's down bad. Where, you know, like, remind me, like, what I do in this scenario. And it's like, remember that decentralization is extremely valuable and important and does change the game.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you're like hyped up on like conceptually decentralization, you can like survive a bear market as long as you're like financially solvent.
I was about to say, decentralization means you will survive.
Yeah.
There will be somebody, some group, some small factions who just want to see this thing like live and exist.
Yeah, like me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so the worse the market gets, the more the people that stay in it are gonna. That's their only reason,
yeah.
right? Is because they're truly to the core.
The true believers stay.
Yeah, and so if you're truly to the core, a believer in decentralization, you're a Bitcoin and ETH maxi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like those are the only like demonstrably decentralized ones
mm-hmm.
today.
Yeah.
So that's my rationale on that.
All right. Now, moving on to more positive news. Citadel has decided to enter crypto.
Oh, God. What?
yeah, dude. Is there anything about this that you think is interesting?
So they're like a market maker, right?
Yeah.
But, like, joke's on them. Market makers need trading to happen in order to make money. They need volumes.
Are you ready trading? For a world where the whole industry is just Sam Bankman-Fried, Sam Trabuco, and Ken Griffin.
Good versus evil.
And Suzu.
And Suzu.
Chaotic evil. Chaotic good. Neutral evil. Oh, I don't know. Who is who good in this situation?
Well, SBF is true good, right?
Is he?
Yeah, he's have not chaotic
seen,
good.
Have you seen the price of serum? Can you consider this man good?
I mean...
anyway,
dude, it's never been cheaper to buy a mega serum.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, wow.
Effective altruism, bro.
Oh god, it sounds like optimism now. Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. Okay,
hard pass. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Citadel entering crypto, whatever.
Literally don't care about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. BlockFi down round. Do you want to talk about this? Just because it's kind of like the numbers are staggering.
It's pretty bad, man. They are.
BlockFi, Celsius competitor, right?
Yeah.
Nouveau bank, like deposit your crypto, earn interest on your crypto, borrow crypto. Like a bunch of people from SoFi, I think, is like where like the founders are from. Like pretty legit, actually. Like the risk management's really good. Like probably not locking up a bunch of staked ETH.
Yeah.
They've hit regulatory issues just because they're more legit than Celsius. Like Celsius has always been the degen one of these. And so they're not really like applying for the licenses, trying to get them.
Right.
BlockFi has applied for all these licenses, can't get them. Like they're not allowed to operate in a bunch of states. But like
New York being one of them.
Yeah. But you know, overall, like they're attempting to be the legit player in like centralized crypto borrow lend is like, or like crypto banking, if you want to think of it that way. What happened with their like valuation?
So they raised a ton of money last year. They were the fastest fintech startup to become a unicorn of all time.
Wow.
Actually, I remember the founder, she was like saying this all over her interview tour. I was like, founder talking about valuations, always a top signal.
Bearish.
Bearish. They actually had, they were in the news a bunch last year around the time of the GBTC unwind. Do you remember this?
No.
Because they were they were one of the biggest players in the Grayscale ecosystem. The way they were generating some of their yields was hammering the GBTC trade.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So
what was the GBTC trade?
GBTC was trading at a massive premium. But only some like early
big
investors were able to actually redeem it for native Bitcoin.
Right. Okay.
So you could have GBTC at this massive premium, trade it for Bitcoin spot, and just capture like 15% spread or whatever.
Right, right.
And then just during the nuke in May last year, GBTC went to this insane discount of like 15%, and now it's at this discount of like 25%.
Wow.
And so yeah, people are like, okay, these guys are fucked. And just coincidentally, not related at all, they raised a ton of money at these in like the same week.
At what kind of valuation?
$3 billion.
$3 billion.
Yeah, $3 billion.
Then I heard they were talking about something closer to $8 or $9 billion.
Yeah, I don't know if they actually ever raised
money.
No,
they didn't
manage
to execute at that valuation.
Yeah.
But I think it was primarily like they started getting into the headlines with all this like regulatory situations.
Right.
And and so they weren't able to like close at that valuation. And then what happened?
Now we're in a true bear market. All these companies need cash. BlockFi is raising more money. What is the valuation do you think they're raising at?
Denominated in penguins?
A clean $1 billion for BlockFi.
$1 billion, wow.
Yeah, pretty wild, man. Like, this was the hot company.
They were discussing 8 months ago.
Yeah, like 6 months
ago.
Yeah,
like, wow.
Pretty crazy, man. This market is so volatile. And, like, one thing I always hear is like common trope from like TradFi macro people is that when you see things getting hammered in the private markets, that's when you can kind of start like, that's when you know like, okay, the effects of this kind of downturn are being felt like in kind of like everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can kind of say, okay, like, okay, we might start getting to a better place soon.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say, so now we know for sure we're in a bear market.
I think we've known that. But, you know, hopefully this is a sign.
In the private market.
That, you know, we can bottom soon.
Yeah, when bottom? You want to talk about more wreckage?
Is there more wreckage?
What yeah, there's the winter wrecked? Mute.
Oh, God. This was just truly insane.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us what happened.
Winter Mute is a market maker, right?
Yeah.
And they have decided they're going to start making markets on the Optimism token, mm-hmm. which we talked about quite a bit in our last recap,
if yeah.
you're interested, listener. And so Optimism tried to send them, I think it was 10 million OP tokens. So at today's price, that's less than $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
They were attempting to send it to a multi-sig address controlled by Wintermute, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess like someone didn't read the email fully and they tried to send it to them on the Optimism network as opposed to the like ETH mainnet, which is like where Wintermute was expecting to receive these tokens.
Mm-hmm.
They were expecting to get them in, it's a little technical, but I think it's like super interesting. They were expecting to get them into this multi-sig, this Gnosis Safe wallet,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Gnosis multi-safes have two functions, or Gnosis multi-sig safes, there are two functions that can create them in the like Gnosis factory contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of them is called like new, and one of them is called like new two.
Okay.
Create and create two. Create is like the old deprecated one for reasons we'll get into in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And create two is like much safer.
Yeah.
So the wallet that they were trying to send it to was created using create, not create two, because uh-huh. Wintermute are OGs in the space. And the way it works is that the address of the safe in create is determined by only two things, right? It's not like a private public key address. It's created programmatically.
Okay.
Depending on A, the address of the like factory contract, the one where you call actually create on that, right?
So is the private key generated programmatically or the public key?
There's no private key, right? It's just a smart contract that will release whatever token
Once you find that nonce number or whatever.
Once it gets signed transactions from the multiple parties, right? So there's no private key. So if they were trying to send it to an address with a regular private key, Wintermute would have been fine because the private key public key mapping is the same on Optimism Network or on Ethereum mainnet. The issue was that it was a contract, right? And the contract address that they sent the funds to didn't exist yet on Optimism. So an attacker came in and said, hang on a second, wait. The contract address is determined by two things. The address of like the factory that made it, and then the nonce, which is like the number of like multi-sig wallets that have been created. And they're like, hang on a second. I can just deploy new Gnosis safes until I hit the right nonce, the corresponding one.
Mm.
And then I'll have a contract living at the address that got the OP tokens that I own.
Okay.
And then I'll be able to like claim all of the OP tokens because the address is the same as it would be on mainnet, but like now I own it, right? And Wintermute has been extremely transparent about what happened, and I think that's why they got wrecked, because they mentioned like it might be possible still to recover the funds. And I think that at that point,
how you do it.
Yeah, it's like, don't do that until you get them.
Yeah.
Right. So what did the attacker do with the OP tokens? This is my
Dude,
favorite part.
I love this. Okay. So the attacker got 20 million OP tokens in total.
20 million. Okay.
20 million. Optimism token was worth like $4 or something. Mm-hmm. Now it's worth like 75 cents, something like that.
Bullish.
So, attacker, 1 million they send to an exchange, cash out 1 million tokens, right? So, like, less than $1 million.
Like Uniswap or something?
I actually don't know. I didn't really. I think maybe centralized exchange even. I don't know.
That's
Binance or something. I have no idea.
Sure.
Cash that out. 1 million they sent to Vitalik. Vitalik's address.
Just Vitalik.eth.
Vitalik.eth.
Wow, that's a lot of walls. Wait,
yeah. I love that. Vitalik, I don't know if that one actually. But it's one of his wallets. 1 million they sent to the Ethereum Foundation, this security researcher. Yeah. Super funny. And then the rest they just kept.
Yeah, yeah, but they also delegated 1 million tokens worth of voting power in the Optimism governance to Vitalik.eth. So
this is just amazing. This person is just half trolling, half like almost white hat hacking, and then also like taking some money for themselves.
I mean,
and
it's
then
so hilarious.
Wintermute is just so clownish here.
Yeah. Like, well, so Wintermute has said they're actually just going to buy the remainder of the tokens if they can.
Mm-hmm.
So clownish. Look, Optimism is the clownish one here. They should have like checked by sending one OP token, right? And then making sure that like it could be claimed or spent or whatever. But like they didn't.
Wasn't that on the part of Wintermute though?
I mean, it depends on what the emails look like, right? But, like, everybody should be checking here.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Like, you should.
Because from the blog post, it seemed like Optimism sent them the 20 million tokens to, like, start trading with and things like that.
Yeah.
And then Wintermute wanted to send it to the Gnosis Safe, and they sent it to...
Oh, shit. Wait. Yeah. Okay. So they sent it direct, and then... Oh, my God. Wow.
I think this is, like, fully Wintermute. The CEO even came out and said, like, we made a catastrophic mistake. So yeah, not great.
Wow.
Pretty interesting, man. These TradFi folks, maybe NGMI. hey, let's touch on one positive thing before we touch it.
Yeah, let's close it out with like a optimistic happy note.
Optimistic.
That word is forever tainted. I mean, yeah, go listen to our optimism piece, listeners.
But one good thing did happen: the Ropsten merge.
Yeah, Roopsten.
Roopsten? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
God, I was saying Ropstein for
years.
Because
you had a meeting, so you couldn't tune into the live coverage. But one of the commentators is Swedish, I guess, and was like, it's called Roopsten.
Okay. Nice. Okay, the Roopsten. Roopsten is a testnet of Ethereum.
Yep, the longest-lived testnet.
Longest-living testnet.
Yep.
And they had their merge this week. We talked about the merge earlier this episode.
We talked
I can
about the
guarantee
merge a
you,
days ago
if
in
you're
our deep
still
dive.
Listening right now, you will love the merge deep dive. So go check that out right now. but the Roopsten merge took place this week. How did it go? Successful? Not successful?
Pretty successful.
Okay.
There were still bugs to be hammered out, right? So some of the client like softwares were like not functioning, and so as a result some nodes became like offline for a little while.
Okay.
They managed to patch it up. So overall successful, right? It's hard to really extrapolate, right? So the current roadmap is, I believe there are two or three more testnets that they're going to like merge. And then it's time for the mainnet, right? And so hopefully they can catch all the bugs during the testnet merges is the playbook here. But we won't really know until there's economic value on the line.
Yeah.
So, but overall it went pretty well. There's a panda bear that shows up in all of the client terminals. Did you know about this?
No.
You don't know about this meme. Man. I'm too technical for my own good. this feels really weird. It's disgusting, like verifiably. Basically the idea is there's a black bear and a polar bear. And I guess the polar bear represents the proof of stake Ethereum because save the polar bears. And then the black bear represents proof of work. And there's this meme where they're like touching and then they merge into a panda bear. Mm. Black and white, right? So the panda bear has become like the official symbol kind of the merge. And when a merge happens successfully, the client software terminals display like a little ASCII art panda.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a full ASCII art panda. Yeah, that's seen the vibe. This. Yeah, yes, yeah. I have. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so if you're ready for some cringiness, like, wait for some panda art, man. Okay, this is coming at you. You heard it here first, folks.
This is now a panda podcast.
So we did see a panda. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
A lot of people were stoked. A lot of people kind of, like, bothered by the fact that, like, the only good thing that happened this entire week was a testnet merge. but it did go through, okay. Right? Which is not, like, catastrophic failure, yeah. At least. So that's good. I mean, stay tuned for more. This is really, like, this is a real merge, right? It's mm-hmm. really proof of work miners on the proof of work chain, and it's really proof of stake using the you know testnet beacon chain. Mm-hmm. There's a couple more, so there's like one more like real proof of work driven testnet that they're gonna merge, mm-hmm. and then there's one where it's like a proof of authority where they basically just whitelist or allow listed a bunch of like operators to like create new blocks.
Okay,
and it's like you know it doesn't really change things honestly from the merge perspective.
Yeah,
stay tuned, I guess. One successful testnet merge down.
Let's go. All right. That's it for this week. It's been quite a week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back early next week with our next deep dive. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.